I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, but doesn't matter because they're far grayer over Old Trafford. Ooh. After that explosive Cristiano Ronaldo interview. We'll be getting into all that, kind of overshadowed Alejandro Garnacho's late goal, yeah, and their win over Fulham. That's not the only thing that's going on, because Manchester City dropping points, Arsenal lost, winning again, Napoli winning again. That's hardly news. We'll have all that, but look, there's obviously one place to start. It's Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm going to just provide a little bit of background to this because you might have seen headlines left and right. There's a man named Piers Morgan who you may or may not be familiar with. He appears on a network called Talk TV, which is somewhere in my on my EPG on my phone. I have to say, I have never watched it.
Me neither.
But he secured a big interview with Cristiano Ronaldo.
They've been friends for a long time.
They've worked together and whatnot. The interview is actually airing Wednesday and Thursday, but he's released clips. Certainly the clips that he's released have been, say the least, pretty explosive.
Yeah.
He said United are trying to force him out of the club. He said it's not just Ten Hag, it's the people above him. He said that Ralf Rangnick isn't really a manager. He said he had to go look him up, which I thought was, wow. Yeah. Like, seriously? He didn't know who he was when he was appointed. And I think what mostly caught the eye is he said he doesn't respect Erik ten Hag because Erik ten Hag does not respect him. Yeah. There is a lot to unpack here, yeah, Jules. So we're going to try to do this as in the rational ways we can. First and foremost, are you surprised that Cristiano would do this?
I'm not surprised because he kind of warned us before a few weeks ago on social media saying I would do an interview soon and the truth will come out and I will say the truth, wait for the truth. Everything else that is written on me or said about me is false. We knew that. I think he had that frustration in him. Remember him snubbing Gary Neville, you know, on the pitch,
right,
snubbing Jamie Carragher. Clearly not happy with what former players and current pundit were saying about him, maybe. Doesn't like, you know, not liking his situation at the club, in the team, leaving early, all that kind of stuff. So you knew that he was probably bubbling up inside and at some point it would have to come out. The timing, I guess, you would think that he did this interview quite a while ago, but said it can only be out during the break before the World Cup.
I'm not even sure he did that. Why, I don't know why it would be quite a while ago. I mean, it could have been any time, right?
Yeah, it could have been any time.
But ill this weekend,
but
so
if someone asks, what about the timing? Well, I guess you do it when there's no more football at club level.
Yeah, I think the timing was very deliberate. I think it was to get this out of the way. Get this issue out of the way for the World Cup. Not have it hanging over him in his mind.
But he can't come back to Manchester United. You agree, right? Now, after saying that, there is no way he can turn up now and face Erik ten Hag again after the World Cup.
I think it would have to be the most improbable of apologies. I think he's far too proud a person to do that. Yeah. Some might say too stubborn. If he does turn up, I don't see how Erik and there isn't some sort of profuse apology. I don't see how Erik ten Hag can play him without losing credibility. And so that would mean that Cristiano Ronaldo, at age 37, would not play football until his contract expires in June.
Or he finds another club in January.
No. I'm saying, Liz, unless he finds another club in January.
Yeah.
Which would also mean him, realistically, because we went through all this in the summer, which would also mean him taking a huge pay cut. I think it's pretty much inevitable. So I think in some ways, and you know, you call me Mr. Brightside, I look on the positives. I don't think that this is a bad thing for Manchester United. I don't think it's a bad thing for Cristiano Ronaldo necessarily. People are saying he's tarnished his legacy. Look, he doesn't come off well. I don't think you're not surprised. I'm not surprised.
No.
We've seen situations where he's come very close to this in the past. Anybody who has spoken to people at Real Madrid and at Juventus and United as well.
He said he was a slave when he could not leave when he wanted to Real Madrid.
Precisely. This isn't new. This is part of his personality.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, there are a lot of people who are, you know, absolute A-list athletes who have this kind of personality because they're surrounded, you know, in an echo chamber of yes men and whatever.
Yeah.
Whether it's Michael Jordan, whether it's Tom Brady, there's a lot of examples. Not Roger Federer, because he's genuinely a good guy, but there's a lot of people who are surrounded in this. And I think if the idea was to get a break, to bring it to a point of no return with Manchester United, so that they have to let him go, maybe even pay him some money to leave in January, thereby making a move affordable, then it's going to work out for Cristiano Ronaldo and it's going to work out for Manchester United.
Yeah. I mean, they can terminate his contract right now. Easily.
I'm not a lawyer. And when people say like they should terminate his contract, it can mean many different things, right? There are certain things that a club can do or if a player is in a serious breach where they can unilaterally terminate his contract and not pay up the rest of his contract. I'm not sure that giving an unauthorized interview, and apparently Manchester United only found out about this when they were boarding their flight to come back from London back to Manchester. I'm not sure that this is one of those situations where you can unilaterally terminate his contract based on that. Again, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah,
I haven't seen
his
contract.
No, I would find this
pretty extraordinary if that was the case. Now, they can also terminate it in a different way. They can terminate it when they go to George Mendes and say, George, and this is the reality, these are the options. They can go to George Mendes' agent and say, George, he's not going to play at all between now and the end of the season. There's no way back for him. So let's get together and let's rescind the contract. And then at that point, George might say, oh, well, but no, give me some money to do it. Give him some money to do it, blah, blah, blah. That's an option too, right? Because between now and the end of the season, off the top of my head, I think United will likely owe him close to £20 million.
Yeah.
So you pay him £3 million or whatever, or £5 million. You know, there's a number where you pay him and he just goes away, right? And then he's happy, Uncle George is happy or whatever. So that is the kind of agreed termination.
Mm-hmm.
But the unilateral termination, I'm not sure that that's...
Yeah, no, maybe. Maybe both of them will say, you know what, there's no point continuing here. So he just said, I'm going to walk away. You don't pay me anything. United said, perfect. We don't want you back here anywhere. And then that's it. And that's maybe what he wants too after that interview. What would he want after the interview?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he wants. But let's look at the options and what happens next. Let's go back to the interview a second, right? And it's my natural contrarian self. What did he say in the interview? That is, we all agree that it was inappropriate and it was unauthorized.
Yeah.
What did he say in the interview, in your mind, that isn't true?
From what we've seen so far, the only issue I have with what he says is when he says they tried to force me to leave.
In the summer.
They didn't want me at the club, some people, last season and also this season. Which is true. I don't think they wanted him there.
Okay.
We've said it many times. But where I would have liked him to say is like, and I didn't want to be here either, because we all know that he tried to leave. We all know that George Mendes tried to find him another club. They didn't want to play in the Europa League. He wanted to play in the Champions League.
That is 100%
true. 100%
true. I agree with you. And that maybe is a sin of omission on his part.
Yeah, but be genuine then. Said, listen, they didn't want me there, but it's okay because I didn't want to be there. I ended up staying because I could not find another club. And now this is the situation. I feel betrayed. I feel blah, 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 blah. Fair enough. But don't forget to say to the whole world that you also didn't want to be there.
This is what it boils down to, I think, very, very simply about why he's still at the club. And this is why I think there are multiple people who are responsible in this. By the way, not Ten Hag. We've said from the start that when you appoint Ten Hag and you embark on a long-term rebuilding process, because that's what it is, right? Your 37-year-old striker on that kind of money is not going to be part of that rebuilding process. Shouldn't be part of it in a perfect world.
And he doesn't even fit the way Ten Hag plays.
It doesn't fit in any
way.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes zero sense whatsoever, right? But the man has a contract, right?
Mm.
So from that perspective, it was in Cristiano's interest to move, and it was in Manchester United's interest to move him on.
Yeah.
The fact that neither Cristiano nor Manchester United, nor George Mendes were able to make that happen last summer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a stain, I think, on all of them.
Yeah,
because it's a stain on Manchester United too, because you know what? It made Erik ten Hag's job more difficult.
Of course. But bite the bullet, pay him off the last season of his contract and set him free and that's it.
And I don't think we can entirely let United off the hook on this one,
on
that part of it, right? They created a situation for himself. Now, obviously, when people say, oh, but there were no offers for him, they're being disingenuous. Let's be very, very clear. There's no offers for Cristiano Ronaldo on the terms that he earned, and nobody was going to also pay a transfer fee to sign him.
That's true.
That's been reported by a billion people from Fabrizio Romano on down, and they're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that there's no clubs who would take him if he was willing to pay take a pay cut, and if there was no transfer fee.
Ruben Amorim, the sporting manager, said when they played against Spurs the other day that they would love him back, but they just can't afford him right now.
So at some point, you have to go back to the summer and say, United, were you perhaps a little bit greedy? Oh, look, but he's still the third leading goal scorer in the Premier League last season. Yeah. We can't let him go for free. Or he's an asset like worth this much on our books. We can't take a hit. Was this the thinking at United? Was this the thinking among some big decision makers at United? I don't know. Equally, George, Uncle George, are you looking out for your client? Are you looking out for this guy who's playing in his last World Cup, who has made you a very wealthy man over the years, and you know that if he stays at United, he's going to deal with his zoo leading up to the World Cup, which is what he cares about, I think, more than anything, right?
And
Portugal.
So.
Did you help yourself there? Equally, Cristiano, you're not a child, right? You may not be in the ins and outs. You may be surrounded in this echo chamber of people where, like, you know, you go on Instagram in your underwear with your family and everybody thinks and you're flexing and people think it's cool and you think it's cool. And most people look at this and say, well, what the heck is this, right?
Yeah.
But surely you should be intelligent enough to understand that the reason you can't move is because the clubs that can't afford you, some of them don't want you because for personal reasons. Others said, yeah, we'll take you, but we're not going to take you and pay you this much money. It's not that difficult to understand.
And he's earned enough money in his career to just go, do you know what?
It's on all of them. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be fair. I blasted Gareth Bale for years over this when he wouldn't move his rear side out of Real Madrid because he was happy collecting his money and not playing. And now it's the same thing with Cristiano. You can't have it both ways.
But we've said it so many times and we warned them, and I think not just us, everybody, that keeping Cristiano at the club, even before the season started, we knew, one, he was not going to play much. And I tell you what, had Anthony Martial not been injured so much, Cristiano would have played even less.
Well, and this brings me to another point.
But just to finish, we said he's going to be more trouble than anything else this season if he stays. He ended up staying. He scored 3 goals, I think, in all competitions. Like maybe 2 in the league and 1 in the Europa League, or 2 in the Europa League, 1 in the league, or 4 maybe, or something like that, which is ridiculous. He was not happy because he was not playing enough. Ten Hag was like, I can't play him. It just doesn't work. Everybody can see it. And that led to so many problems where this could have been so avoided had he left in the summer.
I'm interested in finding why didn't it happen. Because we're all very good. We could all see it. Could United not see it? And I'm going to suggest that maybe the reason United couldn't see it is for the following reasons. One is Erik ten Hag didn't stand up for himself and say, I don't want Cristiano Ronaldo in my team out from the start.
I don't believe that a second.
Now, what don't you believe?
I think publicly he had to say it.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
But privately, he said to the club,
I'm sure he said it privately. I don't blame Erik ten Hag for not saying it publicly as well. And the reason I don't blame Erik ten Hag for it is, you know, you're some bald dude from Ajax. You just landed at Old Trafford. You don't have the political capital to say it. So I don't blame Erik ten Hag in public for saying, oh, no, Cristiano's not a problem. He gets his goals. Oh, yeah, of course he fits. He'll score goals. Whatever that, right? I don't blame Erik ten Hag for this part at all.
No.
So then you look at it. Who's in charge? Richard Arnold? He's just been appointed, right? He's just been appointed to the top seats. I don't think he had the cojones to come out and make a stand like this. Maybe he did privately. Maybe he spoke to the Glazers. John Murtha and his friend Darren Fletcher. Again, these guys, they have no public profile whatsoever, right? They've been in the job for a year. This isn't Monchi we're talking about. They don't have the public capital or the guts to go out and rock the boat and say, no, look, guys, what are we doing here? This is stupid. It's bad for us and it's bad for him if he stays. So it was kind of like a perfect storm that led to this, that led to United. And I think this is a screw up from United in the summer.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. All of this was so predictable. It was unreal. Maybe we didn't think that he would walk out on the team before the end of the Spurs game. I think it was the Spurs game. Maybe we didn't think that, you know, there would be all those problems, but it was still so predictable.
I also want to say this, and I'm putting my Duncan Castles hat on. Last night I was on the show, and obviously it was open season on Cristiano, whatever, right? But when I asked, what bad things has Cristiano done, other than not playing well, which, you know, presumably is not by choice? What bad things has he done, other than leaving early in the Spurs game, for which he gave that is not an apology. Let's not joke about it. It's not an apology. It says, oh, you know, it should have been an apology. But no, what I'm saying is, what disruption has he caused in the past 4 months at Manchester United in terms of bad behavior, in terms of lack of professionalism?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that might be a few things like he did last. I think there's a few things that he maybe did within the training ground like he did last season, but that's Cristiano
right.
for you.
Certainly nothing that's come out, right?
No, nothing that's come out so far this year, but I think you're right. I think if we go back to your initial question about what he said that is wrong in his interview, from what we know, from what we saw, apart from that moment where he didn't admit that he wanted to leave himself, the rest is right. There's been very little evolution since Sir Alex left. The respect for Ten Hag, I think he means that he doesn't have a respect. He said he doesn't respect me, so I don't respect him.
Right. That's his view. Feels, you can't really argue with
and
it.
And he feels that Ten Hag doesn't respect him because he doesn't play him, right?
Or and he wants because to, he doesn't worship him and build a whole team around him.
And he brings him on for 5-10 minutes at the end, which you would think that Cristiano absolutely hates.
I think most players don't like coming on in garbage time, right?
Here. Yeah, especially
goat candidates.
Towards the end of the career. But then again, we go back to the point where you are the wrong club, mate. Cristiano, you are the wrong club. If you think that you can play every single minute or start every single game in that team and do well, this is not happening because it doesn't work for you anymore. The sympathy for his little girl, I mean, as a father, you and I, everybody, you would not. If that really what happens, I don't know. We don't know.
But it's also one of those things, right? He says they don't show enough empathy, right? You can't be wrong when you say that because empathy is something you feel.
Yeah.
So what could United have done more for him?
I don't know.
I'm sure they tried to be supportive of that. He didn't feel that support. When you're dealing with that kind of situation, nobody can tell you how you should process or not process the feelings, right? That's how it felt.
So it's that knowing Cristiano like we do, he still thinks that he can start for this team in the Premier League and score 20 goals a season, which is not true.
But I'll tell you what, Jules, before you say that, right, you can say it's not true, but we've been around enough top-level, world-class athletes to know that 99.9% of them believe in themselves and back themselves, and that's because that's why they are where they are, right?
No,
so I'm not going to blame him for thinking that he can start and score 20 goals in the Premier League this season.
No, but me neither. But there's a point where you can look at yourself and your form and your team and the manager who's in charge, and maybe didn't know Ralf Rangnick. I get that. I think it was an easy tackle, like the one on Wayne Rooney. Well, yeah. I'm better looking than Wayne Rooney. I'm not going to say it, but it's true, so I'm still saying it. I mean, come on, how old are you? Is this the school playground? Are we on primary school saying that you're better looking than Wayne Rooney? I mean, come on. just that point in the interview,
To make it clear, Cristiano, you are better looking than Wayne Rooney. You had a better career than Wayne Rooney. You're taller than Wayne Rooney. You
scored
more goals than Wayne Rooney.
And you won more Champions League.
Exactly, okay? Yeah. So let's get that out of the way. It doesn't mean Wayne Rooney's not entitled to his opinion.
But Cristiano is an intelligent guy. As egocentric as he is, like a lot of the GOATs, we said it, you can at some point, you can just pose yourself, say, okay, this is Ten Hag. I don't know him much, but I know what he's about. This is what he's about. I don't fit in here. Surely, even the biggest of egos look into it and go like, okay.
I'm sorry, but I go back to this. Is it Cristiano or is it the people who are paid handsomely out of his wages to look after him? And I'm talking about George Mendes. I'm talking about Gesty Foot. Oh, we're the best organization in the world. We have millions of people working for us. These are his advisors. And I think part of the problem is you're surrounded by people who keep telling you how wonderful everything is, how great it is. Again, I don't know. I wasn't privy to conversations between George and Cristiano. But if George didn't make this situation very clear to him, George let himself down and let Cristiano down.
Yeah.
And by the way, just a little side, not a good time for the George Mendes empire between Cristiano and Mourinho and Wolves and João Félix, Bernardo Silva still at City.
Yeah.
All these things coming together, not a great time for him. Let's talk options. Let's talk about what can happen in January. Now, I'm assuming that Ronaldo lands this boil, got this out of his chest. He's going to go and he's probably already 100% in Portugal World Cup mode.
Definitely, yeah.
And he's managed to compartmentalize it and he'll deal with what happens in January. Yeah. And I'm assuming in the meantime, George and United are working the phones to try to find a landing 100%. Spot for him. I don't know that much has changed vis-a-vis the summer, in the sense that unless he takes a massive pay cut, there is nobody who will take him, even as an additional striker. Nobody, no Champions League caliber team.
Surely that's going to happen, right? Surely this time he's going to say, listen, it's not about the money here. What offers do I have? I can play for minimum wages or like very low money. United, I think, will let him go on a free.
That's You're wearing a Real Madrid shirt. If he gets on the phone with Carletto and says, that? Carletto, look, after the World Cup, Karim's going to be tired. You've already had to deal with Mariano Diaz at center forward and Rodrigo and whatever. I promise I'll behave. You know I behave for you.
Nah.
Would you? Just, go, if you were Carletto,
needs to go somewhere where he's going to play, Gab. You can't go somewhere.
You don't think he would play Real Madrid? Wait, does Karim Benzema play every game at Real Madrid? I don't think so.
No, but like, yeah, but okay. I think he needs to go somewhere where he's going to be the star and the starting striker. He might not play every single minute of every single game, but he can't come in a club to be the backup of someone, or maybe even the backup of the backup.
Oh, should we invent Cristiano Ronaldo for Tammy Abraham swap?
Oh, my word.
Can you imagine? No, I mean, but this is the thing, right?
But you know what I mean? Why would he go somewhere where he's the backup? He hasn't worked at United. It's not going to work out somewhere else if he just goes to Napoli and he's the backup of Osimhen and of Raspadori. That's not going
to
work.
No, it's not. I'm going to go back to Real Madrid on this point, though, because this is one situation where you know there's somebody who can handle him. And I'm also going to go back to the fact that post-World Cup, Karim Benzema can't play every single game. And I'm going to go back to the fact that Real Madrid won a Champions League with Fede Valverde playing out on the other wing. Is there a way, is there a scenario where you say to Cristiano, you say, look, you'll play some games. The reality is, Valverde is great. Valverde will start every game. He might have to start some of these games in midfield because Luka Modric is nearing 40 and he's going to be coming back from a World Cup. Toni Kroos isn't getting any younger either. So I'm going to have to use Valverde in midfield in some of these games. Rodrigo's great, but he's a kid. We don't have depth. We have Asensio who's on his way out, whatever. If the number is right, if you were Florentino and Carletto comes to you and says, hey, Florin, let's roll the dice on this one. I can control him. It's 6 months, and then we see. Would you do it?
I don't know. I think they had the chance to do it in the summer, and they didn't do it for a reason. So I think the reason will still be there in January for 6 months instead of 12 months in June or July or August.
I think in the summer, the reason they didn't do it was because it was going to cost them a ton of money, and he probably wanted a multi-year deal. But now, if we're talking 6 months, and then let's see what happens.
I do not.
Okay,
I think they'd be very wary.
If we're talking top tier, do we agree that that is the only destination unless Todd Bowley says, oh, look, Tuchel's not here anymore.
Yeah. Right? Hey, Graham, what about Cristiano again? Maybe, I don't know, maybe Sporting, maybe.
No, but if we're talking like the highest echelon.
Oh, highest.
Right? No disrespect to Sporting, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Would you, I mean, now that Bowley brought MLS, in all these advisors. And,
what does he want, Gab? What does he want? Does he want to still enjoy the last few months? I'm not sure it would be enjoyable to go to Real Madrid and play, okay, being nice, 50% of the game between January and May. I don't know how enjoyable is going to be. I don't know. I don't know if it's enjoyable for him to go and play.
Right. If Valverde plays in midfield, and I think he will have to play a lot in midfield, you don't think he's ahead of every other striker that whoever the forward Real Madrid has, except then,
or to play as a right winger?
Except for Vinicius and Benzema?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how he would play on the right wing. I don't know if you change your system and where you go.
You can easily tweak your system. That's not so much of an issue.
I just don't know.
Benzema drops a little deeper, whatever. There are ways to do it. That's not...
How long does he have left in his career? 18 months?
Who knows?
So surely he would want to enjoy those last moments, right?
Mm-hmm. And you don't think it'd be fun playing for Real Madrid, even if you don't play every minute of every game? No? Okay.
Because for him, fun is scoring loads of goals and winning trophies where he takes a big part in
it. I think equally, though, fun for him is the big stage, right?
Yeah, true.
You don't think going
to MLS, for example, is a good idea in January?
No,
That's not an option for him whatsoever.
I don't think that would be a good option for him. I think he would see that. Look, maybe it's different. Maybe if he wins the World Cup, he says, all right, I've done it. Boom, I'm done. Let's go to MLS, right? Mm. That, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful of MLS.
No.
Most
course,
players, when they're at or near the top of the season, right? I don't know that MLS has ever in their history signed a guy who was the third leading Premier League goal scorer 2 years earlier, right? It's right? So unless it's something like that, I just genuinely don't see him. I see him still craving the big stage.
Yeah, maybe.
Craving backing himself to change the manager's mind, even maybe incorrectly.
So,
right?
In that-
and so... And then I would see Sporting as some kind of backup option. Because he knows that if he goes to Sporting, he's playing in his backyard and it's an emotional decision. But you have to be at peace with yourself if you make that step down. And again, no disrespect to Sporting fans.
In that case, I am with you. And I think there's only two options then. Real Madrid is one on a six-month deal. And then you see again in the summer. And then Sporting. There is no one else unless Mourinho and Roma say like, okay, yeah, we take him.
Yeah, but then you don't have Champions League football and you have a zoo and, you know.
So yeah, that's it. I don't see anything else, anybody else.
All right. A word on the game itself, because I don't want to overshadow this, but it is a big away win for Manchester United.
It's big.
One that they needed. I'm struck by this. I'm struck by the fact that United... First of all, this is not Ten Hag's United in the sense that it's not the Ajax Ten Hag United, right? It's not the United that takes that plays the way Ajax did. And this, to me, tells me that he still has a long way to go. And I go back to this, and I mean, people laugh at me, the reality is it's really hard. You know, he had the full preseason. It's really difficult to change the way you play when you're playing, weekend, midweek. It's extremely difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
And, this is a squad that lacks some positions, the players that he would need, too.
So what we're seeing is counter-attacking United. And obviously there were players missing. Antony, of course. Antony's supposedly injured. It's funny how his injury coincided with him doing that spin and then he kind of disappeared.
Yeah,
but
and
I
then
don't
he's
know.
Going to go to the
World Cup. But the... I saw United play well in the first half. They could have scored more.
Yeah.
After the break, and I think Ten Hag came out and said it, we lost control, and that's why he made that.
Yeah, it was far too open.
That defensive, it was a McTominay for Alanga, right?
Yeah, and you're sending on another, or something. Yeah.
You're sending on another defensive midfielder.
Yeah.
To me, that's super negative, and Fulham equalized. Would we be, if the Ronaldo stuff hadn't broken, and Garnacho hadn't come on to score that goal, and with literally like the last kick of the game, would we be criticizing Ten Hag right now?
I think so. We certainly be... highlighting the positives, and there were positives in that first half. And I think Martial, again, I'm completely biased here, but can bring a lot to that team and should have scored. But the second half was a horror show until the Garnacho goal, really.
Why? Why does that happen?
Too open, I think, too hectic. I don't know if it can't come from Ten Hag.
These aren't bad players, and I'm sure Ten Hag didn't say,
but I think
be open and hectic. And
they look tired.
Badly.
And I think when they look tired, when you lose control of games sometimes because you physically cannot be on top of the other teams, which leads you to losing the ball, bad passes, bad positioning, the press is not working as well. And then I think you lose control like that. And I think Fulham are a good team. They've got really good players that can hit you.
And they were without Mitrovic.
And they were.
I mean,
they played with 10 because Vinicius, I mean, like, come on.
Seriously, you put Mitrovic for Vinicius, maybe we're having a different conversation.
But still.
Right now.
But I think they showed guts to win it and character. And I think Garnacho could be something quite very interesting in the future.
All right, final question. Are you on the Paulinho bandwagon?
Oh, I love him.
It's funny because I wouldn't think he'd be the kind of player you would love. Because he's kind of like Matic with wheels, right?
But and younger, yeah.
And younger, yeah. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Cristiano. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Manchester City lose at home to Brentford 2-1 as Ivan Toney bags two goals. Jules, forget the last-ditch winner.
Yep.
This was not a good performance from Pep Guardiola's crew.
No, at all, Gab. Really, I mean, they struggled. They struggled against the long balls from Brentford, which not enabled them to press high and recover the ball high and then put them under pressure that way. They struggled with Ivan Toney full stop in everything that he did, the counter-attacking, the running. I think Brentford did a really good job on Kevin De Bruyne too and on Erling Haaland, which obviously comes down from the good job on De Bruyne. Haaland, who has the lowest, had the lowest XG of his season so far for a game. So, yeah, not good. At least get a point. Don't lose the game at home.
Is it, okay, what struck me about this, especially here though, like, I think Brentford had 25% possession. They had a game plan that you can say is rudimentary.
Very much
so. It's anything but rudimentary, I think, because it's not just about, you know, having three defensive midfielders and lumping the ball and winning the second balls. There's a lot of athleticism to it.
Yeah.
But also there's a lot of positioning to it. There's a lot of coordinated movements so that you don't get caught out and they're not just pinging passes past you.
No. They
so I think it's a real credit to Thomas Frank.
Oh, massively. Yeah.
I am a bit surprised, though, how limp City looked, because ultimately when you have better players, you beat a man, you create space, you shoot on goal.
And certainly after the Foden goal just before the breakout 1-1, you thought, okay, that second half, they're going to destroy them. And they didn't at all. You didn't see much more in the second half than you saw in the first half. In the meantime, Arsenal beat Wolverhampton Wanderers as Julen Lopetegui looks on from the stands, Gab. And Martin Odegaard scores twice. Then a 5 points clear at the top of the Premier League. You believe it now?
I'm not going to come out. I mean, to me, City are still favorites because there's issues of depth in this team and because, you know, they still have the two head-to-heads against Manchester City.
Of course.
City wiped the floor with them in both. City are top, right? However, I'll give you a reason. I'll give you what is not a reason. And I've heard people say, oh, well, you know, they don't have a 20-goal-a-season striker, right? Gabriel Jesus has stopped scoring. He's only 5 goals this season. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense because I actually looked. In the last 10 years, do you know how many teams won the Premier League despite not having a 20-goal-a-season striker?
Well, you said that, but City shares so many goals. That's why.
Three teams. Well, you know what? Arsenal share so many goals. Arsenal have scored the second most goals in the Premier League. Now, is it a concern that Gabriel Jesus underperforms his XG and whatever? It's not great. I had my doubts about Jesus because of the transfer fee and because of the type of player he is.
Yeah.
But this goals argument is nonsense. As long as the team is scoring goals, you don't get extra points for the center forward scoring. Copa del Rey in Spain and Barcelona didn't play, so it's Joan Laporta making headlines.
Yes.
Jules, he said the door is always open for Lionel Messi to return. What's he going to say? And at the Super League, we'll give Barca €1 billion for being a founding member.
I don't think €1 billion is enough, Johan. I have to be honest here. I really expected you to do more than €1 billion. I was expecting like 10 billion maybe to just be a founder of the Super League.
You know what's so stupid?
Can I be a founder and get €1 billion too?
Jules, you know what's so stupid about this? Was so stupid. The Super League with this company, A22, they're going on this charm offensive to say, oh no, look, it's not just about money.
Yeah,
we want to be inclusive. We want to have a dialogue
friendly,
and whatever. This is what they're trying to do. And then you have this guy coming in and says, like, ha ha, screw everybody. We're going to go. $1 billion. He sounds like freaking Dr. Evil or stuff when he says this. Why do you say such silly things?
Oh, my words. Napoli continue to roll as they beat Udinese 3-2 in Serie A. Gabi, 11 wins in a row in the league and very much top of the table.
Yes, and of course, Victor Osimhen scoring again. By the way, don't let the scoreline mislead you somehow.
No?
Napoli went 3-0 up. They were dominating. Then Udinese scored twice, one of them a mistake by Kim. And then all of a sudden, Napoli are like, uh-oh, we don't want to screw this.
You can see on the bench.
From that moment onwards, I don't think Udinese had a shot on goal, right? So, no, they're still very much in the driver's seat.
Yep.
And it's an 8-point lead.
Wow.
Very impressive. Joe Willock's goal propels Newcastle United past Chelsea, which means they'll be third at Christmas. Meanwhile, Graham Potter has taken two of a possible 15 points in the league going back to mid-October. Jules?
Yeah, it's bad. Things are bad at Chelsea. Let's be honest here. For there's explanations to it, and we've said that before, we're not going to repeat, but the imbalance in the squad, the recruitment in the summer, the change of manager, the timing, all of that. However, this is really bad.
Yeah,
they don't play well, they don't win.
All those people who were like, oh, but he's undefeated. Look, he's undefeated. Look at who he's been playing. In that undefeated stint, look at the performances. Look at who they played against, please.
And now is it what, 4 defeats in 5 in all competitions, something like that? It's crazy. It's really bad. There's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of players going away.
Some love for Newcastle.
And love for Newcastle, great. I mean, the performance in itself is everything you expected from there. The energy, the intensity. The goal is a bit lucky because Almiron doesn't want to set the ball up for Willock, of course, but it's still a good goal. And they deserve that win. They deserve their third place. They've been the third best team in the country this season so far, behind City and Arsenal. Juve beat Lazio 3-0 to make it 6 Serie A wins in a row and 6 clean sheets as well in a row. Gab, they're up to third now. So what, have we been wrong all the way with Max Allegri?
No. We haven't. Let me remind you that these results are coming around. A couple things here. So they played really well against Lazio. Yeah. Fully deserved to win. I mean, this is Lazio missing two of their front three in Zaccagni and Immobile, but still.
And making mistakes.
And Lazio making mistakes and whatever, right? Equally, those 6 wins, they included ones like the one against Verona, where they were terrible and were very lucky to win. They lost the XG battle there. They lost the XG battle against Inter when they could have been 2 or 3-0, 3 goals down at halftime. So, yeah, performances matter. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They do.
Performances matter.
They do.
As for Allegri, oh, and by the way, people are like, oh, they have the best defense in Serie A. Look, it's going to be the Brazil defense, Danilo, Bremer, Sandro. Guys, I refer you to XG again. I think the XG is like the conceded is like twice the number of goals they've actually conceded. That's not sustainable.
No.
So there's areas for improvement in every part of the team. We weren't wrong about Allegri because his hand's been forced. He's been forced to play Fagioli. He's been forced to play Moise Kean. And the other thing is, more worryingly, remember the whole plan when Allegri said about what his front six was going to be? That entire front six, apart from Adrian Rabiot, who I believe you'll be visiting shortly, all these other guys, in this 6-game stint, Vlahovic, I think, started the first 2 of those games. Di Maria hasn't played. Di Maria hasn't started. Chiesa hasn't started. Pogba's obviously been out. And Paredes hasn't started. So, no, it wasn't the plan you had in the summer. So we weren't wrong about him. It's just that, you know, when he works with what he has and coaches them, they do better. And this was an impressive thing. But they have to get a lot better if they want to get where they want to go.
Stay where they are as well, yeah.
Mr. Late Goals, Rodrigo Bentancur hits twice to push Tottenham to a comfort behind win over Jesse Marsh's Leeds United. Jules, funny enough, Spurs are better going forward when Richarlison and Kulusevski start. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Yeah, Bentancur, well done again, like he did at Bournemouth, scoring late to win it. I mean, the Kulusevski, it's a good goal from Bentancur and he's at the right place at the right time, but Kulusevski does all the work, all the difference, what a player he is and how much they've missed him. And They did really well without him to be where they are now in fourth place. But it would have been much better with Kulusevski, of course, even more than Richarlison. You take the win and maybe you worry later about again going behind again, I think twice in a game. And for Jesse Marsh, you're gutted because you were so close.
Yeah.
But there's a point, Jesse, where you need to control games. Stop just thinking about attacking all the time because obviously he leaves you exposed.
How cute was Hongmin Son with his little sweater and his little glasses?
Yeah, the Burberry. Don't touch my face. Please don't touch my face. Sticking with that game, Gab, did you understand why VAR did not strike off Harry Kane's goal, considering Clément Lenglet ran into Ilan Meslier? Or is it just French love and you just like don't look at it?
He didn't just run into him. He absolutely pancaked him. This isn't like, oh, English football's physical, blah, blah. Even freaking Alan Shearer, you know, who knows a thing or two about being said, like, that is a foul 100% of the time. I don't know what VAR saw. I don't know why they don't interfere. Enough with this stupid clear and obvious thing.
Yeah.
Just do your job. It takes you 3 seconds to have the referee look at it. And then if the referee then says, oh, no, I saw it clearly, it's entirely fine to do that, then, you know, expect to see Dan Byrne going and stomping on keepers, you know. Paris Saint-Germain beat up Auxerre 5-0 and the M&M put on a show. Jules, I'm going to give them some credit because I think, and Gauthier some credit, because in years past, the last game before World Cup, I'm imagining Neymar gets the sniffles, Messi gets imaginary diarrhea, but no, they were there, they had fun, they enjoyed it.
Yeah. They played really well as well. I mean, it helped that he was against Auxerre, who in the whole 90 minutes, I mean, it was 95 in the end, I think, or something. I mean, committed 7 fouls. It was clearly like, oh, we're in your garden here, Parc des Princes. Yeah, we let you play, okay? We let you play.
You don't want to ruin the spectacle of the World Cup. You don't want to be the Grinch who injures Neymar.
I was like, it was so uncommitted from Auxerre, but anyway, they had fun. Kylian scored, of course. Mbappé and Neymar and Messi had really good games, even if they didn't score. Young Ekitike scored his first goal, finally. So everybody was happy in Paris. And then 12 players from that PSG squad obviously went off or are about to go off to Qatar. So at least no injuries, yeah, apart from President Kimpembe, who came back in that game, but he's not fit enough. So he's withdrawn from the front squad.
That Ekitike goal celebration where they're all around him and it looks like, you remember what reminded me? Reminded me of a gang initiation.
That's it, exactly.
Oh, really?
That's initiation, they warned him before. So
whatever floats your boat, man.
Bayern beat Schalke 2-0 on the road, and Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting scores again. Gab, were you surprised they stopped at 2 though?
I mean,
it was 2-0 at halftime, by the way.
I mean, I think they just managed this game. Schalke were terrible. I think once again, we obviously shout out to Choupo-Moting. Once again, Jamal Musiala, what a player. At some point, somebody needs to tell the story properly of how it's possible that this guy plays for England at youth level and then opts to play for Germany, spends 8 years at Chelsea, and then can move to... I mean, is one that got away. Maybe it's what he wanted all along.
Maybe
he played for Germany at youth level, then chose England, then went back.
Yeah.
I think there should be a mini inquest here if he becomes as great as we think he is.
Yeah.
Darwin Nunez seals the show as Liverpool beat Southampton 3-1. Jules, are we seeing the Liverpool of old on their way back?
It's much better for sure. I mean, it was Southampton, let's be honest here.
New manager and everything.
New manager, but no bounds. I mean, they were just not good enough on the day. Too lightweight, maybe too naive as well. But Darwin, who I think has a goal scored, he's involved in a goal every 88 minutes or 90 minutes, which is pretty impressive for someone who some people called a flop not that long ago. We knew that he would come good. We knew that playing like that with Firmino and Salah up front and him slightly on the left-hand side but with the freedom of coming inside would be really good for him, because despite being big and strong, he's still quick and can easily play wide. So this is good. I think they are finding their mojo now, and it makes the second half of the season, if they're all fit when they come back from the World Cup, really interesting, I think.
I don't think this was Liverpool of old, but it was obviously functional.
But it might never
Liverpool.
Be again, to be fair.
It may never be again, you're right.
So... staying with Liverpool, Gab, the Mail on Sunday reports that FSG already have a buyer and that they've been negotiating secretly for the past few weeks.
Yes, a mystery buyer who apparently is offering less.
Is it you?
Sorry?
Is it you?
It is not me. I'm sorry to report.
It's not me either.
Apparently, they're putting out that Liverpool want $4 billion, hoping to get $3 billion because mystery buyer has offered substantially less than $3
billion. Okay.
Hence why they're hoping to rope other people. Like, it's entirely plausible. We don't know how far along it is, but I go back to what I said all along. Like, it makes no sense for anybody, for them to sell the club until we get the Super League verdict.
Yeah.
This was way back on Friday, but Borussia Dortmund lost the battle of the Borussias against Gladbach, and this was followed by club CEO Hans-Joachim Watzke confirming that they will hold talks with Jude Bellingham, but, quote, can't afford to fight, unquote, to keep him.
So you will hold talks. To say what exactly? Because, I mean, I think you're very happy to cash in on him now, even if you probably would want to keep him because he's so good, so amazing for you. But you know he wants to leave. You know it's the right time for him to leave. So, because they're like, okay, when is your house free? Because we might rent it out for another player that's coming after you. Or like... that the talks, it's a waste of time. It's a complete waste of time.
Does it depress you, this dysfunction of modern football, that Borussia Dortmund, the club with the second or third highest attendance in all of Europe, if not the highest, the second biggest club from the richest country in Europe, is basically just a feeder club now?
I don't think it's a feeder. Well, I don't know if feeder club is the right word.
No, it is. It's
not just staying because they can't afford the same. They can't pay the same wages as City or Liverpool or United will. He's also leaving because there's nothing there for him to win.
Precisely, they're a feeder club.
Yeah, Edin Dzeko shines at Inter, gets 3 big points away at Atalanta with a 3-2 win, Gab.
Yeah, Edin Dzeko's been absolutely phenomenal. This was a tricky game for Inter. I thought Inter were actually quite poor in the first half. Atalanta, we saw the Atalanta of old going out, man for man all over the pitch, creating problems. Lookman again, giving him the lead. And then Dzeko and Lautaro, to be fair. Well, Dzeko actually equalized in the first half, but then Inter took over the game after the break. He's a model pro, and look, he's got three things going for him that others don't have. One is he's big and he's very, very fit. Two is he's a tremendous passer of the ball with tremendous individual technique. And three, he's unselfish and intelligent.
He's intelligent, yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Jules, you were incredibly mean about Igor Tudor, suggesting that he should be sacked after the Spurs game.
That was terrible.
But Marseille win again, beating Monaco away with a dramatic last-ditch winner from Sead Kolasinac in, what, minute 98?
Wow, great game, Gab. We said how bad the Olympico the week before against Lyon was, but this was great. It was great. Loads of goals.
You know
goals.
What? It's because Lyon make the game bad.
Yeah,
Larry
true.
White
exactly.
makes the game bad.
Yeah. And Marseille were really good in the first half. Monaco were really good in the second half, and they were 2-1 up when Zac Efron scored the second goal of Kevin Volland, but no one has never seen them in the same room at the same time. And then drama happened because Marseille scored 2-2, very 2, and then Cusel, it's never a foul, it's a wide free kick. Dimitri Payet, who came on for Amin Harit, by the way.
He's going to be out.
Yeah, he's going to be out. Bad injury. So a lot of thought for Amin and his family missing the World Cup, the Moroccan International, which is terrible for him. And then Kolasinac scoring that winner and then going celebrated in front of the, 10,000 Marseille fans or whatever they were there in Monaco. Incredible. Axel Disasi, who just replaced Presnel Kimpembe, by the way, and will be going to the World Cup. The Monaco defender, really angry at the referee at the end, saying, you know, the referee was for Marseille, this is unfair, he gave them everything, that's never a foul on the goal that we conceded, the third goal. So I think the league might look into that, but Disasi very frustrated, like the whole Monaco van, and for Marseille, they were over the moon, as you would expect.
10,000 Marseille fans?
Yeah, maybe a little bit less.
That's like, what, 80% of the stadium?
Not 80, because I think it's an 18,000.
Like
it was just, they were everywhere. Milan beat Fiorentina to stay second, but Gab, this was labored and controversial with yet another injury time winner.
Yeah, Milan were poor.
So bad.
Milan were really bad, especially in the first half. Tomori having to save off the line. Everything is so labored.
Yeah,
they look
so
tired.
Slow.
That intensity that they had in the past, like, it's just not there this season. And, you know, on top of that, all these late goals that they get, people say, oh, look, because, you know, we've got green team spirit and we believe. Yeah, maybe, or maybe it's because you were rubbish for the previous 89 minutes. Fiorentina angry with some of the officiating. The goal itself.
The second goal, yeah.
Total bizarro goal where essentially the, I think it was Franks, sends the ball in. It's a cross into the box. Rebic goes up to head it. The goalkeeper, Terracciano, comes out and essentially collides with him.
Yeah, and misses the ball.
Misses it entirely, and they're saying, oh, it was a Rebic. It was not a foul from Rebic. So let's be clear on this. But yeah, not a good way to win. But the upshot is, at least they're still second. And now you can rest up, maybe get some of your injured players back, because they've had a lot of injuries.
Yeah, that's true.
Leipzig's Marco Rose therapy continues to yield results. 6 wins in a row after a 2-1 victory over Werder Bremen, Jules.
Yeah, that was good. Although, again, they had to work hard for it away in Bremen. But they did it. Schlager with the goal when it was 1-1, the winning goal in the second half. I think they still played well. And again, I think the break, in a way, comes at the wrong time because they've got so much momentum, but a good time because they will get some rest. It will work them out. Let's not forget that in the Bundesliga, you've got another month after the World Cup, by the way. Not like every other league that starts straight away. So I think that would be good for them to prepare the City game, of course, in the Champions League, but also to keep their sending form in the league, really. They're 6 points behind Bayern. I think this is too much, but you never know. Maybe finishing
6
second.
Points, not a lot.
No, that's true.
Half the season to go.
That's true. Crazy finish to the Roma.
Well, by the way, I believe the first game back is actually Leipzig playing Bayern.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that might be January 20th or something like that. That would be cool. Crazy finish to the Roma-Torino game, Gab. Crazier still, what's happening with Kirik Kasdrop? Remember, we told you in the last show.
So I'm going to start with the end of this game. Roma were really poor.
That's so bad.
Jose Mourinho getting sent off for abusing the referee.
And again?
Afterwards saying, oh, yeah, no. He was right to send me off because I shouldn't, because I said some terrible things to him. Okay, maybe don't get sent off. Okay, how about that? But at least points for accepting that. Paulo Dybala finally makes his return just in time to go to the World Cup. He comes on. It's like injury time. He wins a penalty. This is pretty wild, I thought. So he wins the penalty, but then he somehow either injures himself, getting fouled. He doesn't want to take the penalty, is the long
Pellegrini's short of it. On the bench, by the way.
Pellegrini's on the bench. So Belotti goes up. Belotti, of course, a former long-time Torino player, goes up to take the penalty, which...
You could tell he was not comfortable with it, I thought.
Already I thought it was weird. I'm like, Paolo, like, it's not like you're injured again. Like, just take a minute and take the penalty.
Yeah.
But whatever. Belotti takes it. He whacks the ball against the post, comes back in play. Dybala, who suddenly is not injured, picks it up, sends it slamming against, was it the crossbar, I think. Ball comes out. Of all people, Nemanja Matic, like 40 yards out, just absolutely leathers it.
First
time volley, big boot. I don't know if he scored better goals. He may have.
It's a bit deflected. There's a slight deflection.
And they get this crazy equalizer. That was wild enough, but the Rick Karsdorp story has really taken a very, very ugly turn. You'll remember that a week ago, Mourinho came out and, or maybe it wasn't a week ago, it was on Thursday night.
Yeah,
it was after the midweek game and talked about, he said, like, there's one player who has let us all down, one player I've told him to go get another club, blah, 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 let his teammates down, let the city down, just... He didn't name the player, but...
We all knew.
Everybody knew, and the club kind of convinced it. And that player, of course, Rick Karsdorp. Turns out Rick Karsdorp has left Rome early. He's gone to join... He's gone back to Holland.
Mm.
Unsurprisingly, there's enough weirdos and psychos in Rome, as in any town, that, he just can't be there. Mourinho said, I don't have to explain to you why I took the decision, blah, blah, blah. You know what? You kind of do.
Dangerous.
Because if you call him out in public before, which is what you did, if you call him out in public, you have to explain your decision. Otherwise, do what most managers did. Do what you did throughout your entire career and deal with it privately if he's upset you so much. Karsdorp was so sweet. I don't know if you saw his Instagram. Tweeting out like a broken heart and like a little crying emoji. And it's weird, too, because Karsdorp is a guy who had been regenerated by Mourinho.
Yeah,
he played really well in the
good.
Conference League last year. Obviously, he's had some terrible games.
Yeah.
So weird to me what's happening with this one. Lyon and Nice share the spoils, Jules, but not great from Larry White.
No, Larry White struggling. Laurent Blanc at Lyon since arriving. There's been a win there and there, but overall, it's just not good enough. With the ball during the game, this was a home game against Nice. Nice went 1-0 up, and they were the better side, really. There was just nothing. And Lyon were lucky in the end that they got a penalty. Lacazette won it. Lacazette scored it. Iconic celebration, maybe, and you know how much I love Laka, but this is just terrible. And Blanc can keep saying, they're not fit, the other Dutch guy did a bad job, blah, 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 blaming his predecessor. Okay, I get it, but you've been here long enough now for us to see at least a little bit better, but that was terrible.
Surely it's Peter Boss's fault, though, right?
Yeah, of course. It always is. Gab, can we officially declare the Union Berlin story over? Freiburg destroy them 4-1 as your boy Vincenzo Grifo gets a hat-trick in the first, 20 minutes or 15 minutes.
Couple penalties in there, but obviously I'm happy for Grifo, who will be watching the World Cup on television. Union Berlin were terrible. They also missed a penalty. I'm sorry, but... If your game is predicated on having no possession, booting the ball, set pieces, at some point you're going to regress to the mean, and that's what we're seeing. It's not like I know the whole Christian strike, Christian strike. They're not good either, right? and I know it's impressive,
They're good.
No, but the story in the Bundesliga, I'm sorry. The story in the Bundesliga is the fact that these other teams were supposed to be good, like Bayer Leverkusen, them, Borussia Dortmund and Leipzig started badly. Nobody's been consistent, right? So you know, that's why Freiburg and Union Berlin were up there. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's 5 wins in a row for Lens, who beat Clermont-Foot 2-1. Jules, they're second. They have a lot of points. Should we be celebrating them more than we do?
Yeah, 100% Lens. One of the stories of the season so far, without a doubt, in the whole of Europe, Gab. Incredible, considering their budget, considering the club that they are, what they represent for the community, for their fans, incredible fans, some of the best in Europe again.
Why is their budget so small? They have a nice stadium. They have a lot of fans. They have
it's just not much.
Wealthy owner. No.
They don't play in Europe. They haven't played in Europe since the last time they were champions in 1997.
It's fine. I don't expect them to be Manchester United.
No, but you get money. You know, the TV rights in France are good, and the new CVC deal, I think, will bring them more money. But it's still a club that has
It's just funny because you keep going on about Lens, but Rennes are third in the table, right? And they don't get any love from you.
Well, no, but they do sometimes. They do sometimes. I may be biased with Lens because...
Lens are a bigger club historically than Rennes, yes?
Yeah, they are in terms of following and stuff like that. And their owner is my friend, so obviously, you know...
Yeah, I see that.
I wish the Rennes owner was my friend too, and we could get a lot of discount on, you know... A big fashion clothing range, but it's Lens amazing. Rennes have been amazing. Both of them have never had so many points at this stage of the season before. It's the best ever start. So they need to be, they deserve to be celebrated, Gab. You're right. After Fulham, there's plenty of controversy over another Premier League club sponsor. Oh, it's Manchester City and their sponsor 8xBet.
Is this such
eight
a
times bet? I don't know. How you really
I don't know. So this is a story that was originally broken by the Norwegian investigative magazine, Jostimar, and then it was taken on further by Nick Harris in the Mail on Sunday. It's weird. So this company 8xBet, we don't know the size of their sponsorship of Manchester City, but obviously they are City
sponsors. Pretty good, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're...
Because they're everywhere. Hey, you can
say, it
they.
Turns up. So according to the story, they've just investigated. It turns out that like they had Teddy Sheringham as a testimonial, supposedly. But then like he filmed some sort of promotional video with somebody who is a lingerie model and doesn't actually work for the company, but she was all dressed up as if she was some sort of company executive. There's a marketing company in Dubai, which supposedly runs them, which, again, I thought was kind of odd in the sense that I don't think betting is particularly popular in the Emirates for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The whole thing just seems kind of murky when you have these brands that you've never heard of chucking big money.
Yeah.
They don't really seem to have a big operation either. This happened last year with Manchester City, where they kind of got duped into a sponsorship. Mm. You would imagine that they would... If they are being duped here, that you know that they would take their time to go and investigate who is giving them money and ask themselves, do I want to be associated with this brand or not? And maybe entirely above board, but it's certainly odd. And by the way, just by the by, we've known this, but Manchester City confirming in their accounts, apparently for the first time, that they are still being investigated by the Premier League over... financial fair play or the equivalent of financial fair play regulations stemming from the revelations in Der Spiegel. This is what got them the 2-year ban, which was later overturned by CAS. But it's interesting because it's the first time that they've acknowledged it. I'm wondering if we're moving towards a resolution in that case one way or the other. Mm. Jules, we went to see Vincent Kompany last week. We'll be doing a Gab and Jules meets with him soon, but I think we were good luck charms.
We were, because they had the derby against Blackburn on Sunday afternoon. It was first against second as well in the championship for the listeners who don't really follow it. And they were amazing. I mean, I watched it just because of Vincent and just because like I wanted to see all the things that he told us. And you will be able to hear it in the Gab and Jules meet soon with him, which was fascinating. And they were so impressive. And really? Blackburn are good. I mean, Blackburn are like, they play quite more old school than Burnley.
That's the first time you've actually mentioned Burnley in your answer. For those of us who didn't know that Vincent Kompany, he is the Burnley manager.
Oh, yes, he's the Burnley manager. Sorry, not the Blackburn manager. And they were great. I think Blackburn had just one shot the whole game. They had 60% of the ball. They created so many. They could have won by more. So well done, Vinny. I know you'll be listening. And they continue to be... So they will be top at Christmas, of course. They continue their really, really good season under him. So well done. Really well done. Back to that Inter game, Gab, because Palomino started after 4 months out. Where was he all that time?
Yeah, so Palomino, the Atalanta defender, this is a tale that I think should get a little more attention because he was he was provisionally suspended for taking performance-enhancing drugs. Now, he had a defense for it. He said that it was entirely accidental. It was a mislabeled box. He had everything. And, you know, he was offered a plea deal. So he's like, oh, we'll only ban you for 6 months or a year if you admit guilt. And he said, no, I'm not admitting guilt. I'll fight this till the very end.
Yeah.
And he did. And eventually he said, we were completely wrong on this.
That's crazy, isn't it?
We got this totally wrong. And to credit him, they came back. Like, I don't think anybody wants to see doping in sport,
no.
But that's why it's so crucial that when there are these investigations, the authorities do everything right and by the book.
Yeah.
No room for Sergio Ramos or Thiago Alcántara in the Spain squad. Jules, are you okay with that?
Not so much. I mean, I love Luis Enrique, like you, Gabby. We're big fans, of course. I found the Thiago Alcántara omission strange. And it's not a surprise either, because he was not part of the last few squads. I just think a player like that in a team as young as the Spain team and is an added value, unless you think that if you don't start him, then that could create problems. And I would think that that's maybe the reason why he's not there. I don't know. And for Sergio Ramos, back to a really good level, back to a good level, let's put it that way, at his age. He really wanted a fifth World Cup, take part in a fifth World Cup. I think this one was a longer shot because you have better defenders than him in your team right now.
You don't have many very good... There's not a lot of depth at centre-back for Spain. I think that's why he was hoping to get in.
Yeah. And considering the season he's done so far, playing regularly with PSG, hardly not missing anything and being good, maybe he thought was enough. I don't know, maybe it's what... Would you take those guys to leave them on the bench potentially the whole World Cup?
I think that's part of Luis Enrique's thinking, is these guys may be better than some of the players I have, but I don't want to have the veteran on the bench. Ashraf Hakimi, of course, disagrees because, of course, he argued that Sergio Ramos should be going.
Should have been, yeah, of course. Real Madrid also had the weekend off, but Gab, shall we celebrate Antonio Rudiger?
I think so, because he came out and he said, you know, when players go to the World Cup, they earn... They're still paid by their clubs, obviously, but they also get a share of prize money. They get an automatic amount for every day they're there, and then they get prize money depending how far they go. And he said, I'm going to take my prize money, and I'm going to use it to pay for children who need operations in Sierra Leone. I think it's a really nice gesture.
Yeah.
You know, I often wonder, I know there's a lot of athletes who go and do important philanthropic things. And, you know, we saw, you know, Juan Mata had the thing where they were pledging, was it 1% of their salary or whatever. Yeah. And I thought this is a nice gesture. I'd love it if others took the lead from him and
said... There's a lot of players who gives their bonus from the national team to charity automatically all the time. So I think he...
Okay, so we should celebrate Rudiger.
We should, because it's great. But I think the more we can highlight, the more of them doing it. But
absolutely.
For example, I know the French one, none of them actually keep their bonus from the national team for them. They give them all to charity.
Louis van Gaal announces his Dutch squad for the World Cup and said he plans on winning it. Jules, I know you're a fan of this other Dutch guy.
I mean, I think Holland, as you like to call them, and not the Netherlands, will be a show at this World Cup. I mean, I think the way they play and everything that is going to happen within that national team, with the media, with van Gaal, this goalkeeper situation cracks me up because he's tried literally 100 of them. He left Cillessen and Flecken at home, for example, which I think took a lot of people by surprise in the Netherlands. He's saying that they're going to win it. He said that you're speaking to the World Cup champions because we're going to win it. He's just so arrogant and so everything. I just love it.
To quote Kid Rock, it ain't bragging if you say it, then you back it up.
Exactly. So let's see if they actually do it on December 18th. But yeah, I think we should follow them closely because it could be fun.
This goalkeeper thing is weird because, as you said, we were talking about this before, right? So he leaves out Flecken, who I think is probably having the best season out of all of them.
You would think so.
As well as Jasper Cillessen, who I don't think is particularly good.
No, but...
But he's taking the guy from Feyenoord, who I think is only in his second season as a starter. He's taking... Remco Pasveer is the Ajax goalkeeper. For those who don't know, the guy is 39 years old. He was playing for small teams all his life. Then he kind of had a resurgence in his career.
Number two, you know, it was just crazy.
It's
then
so
became
weird.
Number one.
And then the other dude, I don't think has been capped yet by Holland. So I don't know.
I don't even think he's been called up. Yeah, no, it's crazy. So this is going to be fun for sure. David Hornstein and The Athletic reports that Bournemouth are exploring the possibility of bringing in Marcelo Bielsa. Gab, I'm really excited. I'm sure you are too.
How could you not be excited by Marcelo Bielsa? Look, my only thing with Bielsa is if you parachute him in at midseason, is it going to work? But, you know, then again, I'm actually thinking about this.
It's a mini preseason he has now, if he comes now.
Yeah, it's not like Bournemouth are sending dozens of players to the World Cup. No. I'm sure there must be a couple off the top of my head. Sure, why not? Bring in Bielsa. Let's have some showtime. Let's have some excitement on the South Coast. It's weird, though. Like, the new owner apparently met with him in Las Vegas. I don't know where Bielsa spends his offseason. I'm assuming Rosario.
Yeah, you would think so.
Was it easier to get to Vegas than or
then for them to
Vegas?
Go to Argentina? Maybe to
I don't know. But yes, I would absolutely love it if Bielsa came back. Dua Lipa has denied rumors that she'll be performing at the opening ceremony at the Qatar World Cup next Sunday. In fact, she says she won't be going there until the country fulfills all the pledges it made when it won the rights to host the World Cup.
Good for you, Dua Lipa. Very good for you. I don't know you. I don't know what you sing, but I'm sure you're very talented. But I like that. I'm sure she was offered the possibility to go for a lot of money, like a lot of artists. Some chose to be involved in it, and that's their choice. But she didn't, and I think she stood for her beliefs, and that's really good.
Yeah, all right. Just minor pedantic clarification. When Qatar, and this shows you how dysfunctional football is, when Qatar won the rights, we know how they won the rights to the World Cup, they didn't have any obligations or pledges to make in terms of LGBTQ rights, in terms of migrant workers' rights.
No,
of course. But that just shows you how messed up and dysfunctional the world was and the 24 people on the executive committee were at the time.
Yeah. And Gab, let's go back to the wild world of Italian football. Who is Rosario D'Onofrio and why is he in the news?
Rosario D'Onofrio, who I have to admit I had never heard of until yesterday. So apparently he is a prosecutor in the referee's office. He goes and investigates cases of refereeing malfeasance and whatever. Not so much match fixing, but improper things outside football. So it turns out that this guy has been arrested. He's been accused of essentially running drugs. He was arrested with large quantities of or arrested and implicated in the transportation of large quantities of drugs into the country. Now, all this other stuff has emerged that it's not clear. The Referees Association, I mean, he is a former linesman. The Referee Association gave him this job thinking that he was a lawyer. Turns out he was not really a lawyer. He told them that he'd been in military intelligence. Turns out that that's apparently not true either. I don't know. I just think this is such a freak show. I hope we have a proper investigation. The only consoling fact is I don't think he was able to do any kind of serious damage, at least within football.
Hopefully.
In terms of importing illegal drugs, that, I think a court's going to decide that.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
Wow.
Guess what? The next show we do is going to be from Qatar, baby.
Ooh,
Doha, incoming your way. It's not going to be on Thursdays. It's going to be Friday because we need time to get out there.
Yeah.
I think we might talk a little bit about the World Cup, maybe a little bit about Cristiano too. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.